Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. What's that in your crosshairs? It looks like a deer, but it's acting strange. Suddenly, it stands up on two legs and begins to run towards you screeching. What would you do? How would you react? Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Today, we're going to be sharing some allegedly true and downright creepy hunting stories sent in by viewers just like you. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. Now, without further ado, let us get right into these creepy spooks that are roaming the woods. I grew up in some mountains of Kentucky. My birthday falls on the first day of open season. Being raised by a male, I would always go hunting for my birthday, even though it's a guy's sport, as many say. For my 13th birthday, my father gave me a pink 30-06. I was so excited and wanted to take it out. My father and I, the next morning at about 4:30 in the morning, all decked out in our hunting gear, decided to grab our stuff alongside our walking sticks and hike up the mountain to our stands. Being 13, my father allowed me to be in my own stand at the time, as he was not much farther than probably 30 yards away. Our hunting stands were in a tree, more like a treehouse than a hunting stand. I got in my stand and set up my area. When my father got to his stand, he texted me to let me know that all was clear. After probably no more than an hour of not seeing much of anything, I saw something. It was the biggest buck I think I have ever seen. I took my aim and shot. If you have never been hunting, many times when you shoot, the animal will run off, so you have to follow the blood and footprints until you come across the body. For the record, I'm a pretty damn good shot, as I was taught how to shoot by a US Marine. I shot this buck, but rather than going down or running off, it screamed, sounding like a high-pitched, unearthly scream. Then the buck, or whatever this thing was, began to run off. I quickly brushed off the scream as a mountain lion, as they make the same noise. I scrambled down from the stand and run to the spot where this thing was standing. My father ran up behind me and commented on that mountain lion that must be close, saying we need to get that deer quick before the cat does. We see blood drops and chase it until we are in a clearing where the blood just seemingly stops. There is nobody or any footprints anywhere. This is absolutely astonishing. We decided that we would go back to the stands and continue hunting. Fast forward to that night, my father worked on a night shift, and he was a single parent of 5 kids. At night, we would sleep at my grandparents' house when he had to work. My grandparents' house was on the top of a steep hill, and at the bottom of the hill, there was a pretty dense forest. I went to sleep but was awoken by some kind of high-pitched scream, very similar to what I had heard earlier. I go to the window and see this buck standing in my grandparents' yard. I remember a sense of dread and darkness as this thing looked at me and stood on its hind legs. I ran back to my bed and lay down. I heard it scream at least 3 more times at night. My grandfather rushed into my room, and I pointed at the window. He said it was running with ease down this very steep hill, on its hind legs. My grandfather, being Native American, has heard legends of these skimwalkers and did cleansing rituals on the land. I never saw this thing again, but that scream, it haunts me, even to this very day. My grandfather was an absolute badass guy. He was born somewhere in Alberta during the early 30s and raised his 3 brothers on a reservation from the time he was 9. When his parents left for BC with their only daughter, they promised to return, and none of the boys ever saw them again. To make ends meet, he learned carpentry and worked as a laborer and bare-knuckle boxed against older men for extra cash. He learned how to track and hunt, and always came home with something to eat when work was scarce. When he was 14, he put the 2nd oldest brother in charge of the household, left the reservation in search of his parents and a better life, and never went back. That was the last time he saw any of his family members. He spent several months riding the rails, befriending some transients, while using his fighting skills to defend himself against others. He eventually made his way to Vancouver, the last known whereabouts of his parents and sister, and started working in a pulp mill. At 17 years old, he eventually met my grandmother, and the two eventually married, leading to him giving up his search for his family. They bought some land, and he spent his free time building several houses, which will stand to this day. One of those sat on the land he bought with my grandmother, which included acres of wooded area. On this land, my grandparents kept dogs, horses, and small farm animals for eggs and meat. My aunt was born in the early 50s, and then my mother came along right before the end of the decade. As far as I have heard, nothing bad or really strange happened until my mom found an old Ouija board and played it by herself. But I don't know if that has anything to do with this story. My mother was around 8 when she was riding her horse through the wooded part of their acreage when the horse stopped dead in its tracks. My mom tried to spur it on, but it was frozen in fear, and all of a sudden, she smelled something like rotting garbage or meat. She pulled back on the reins and the horse instantly turned and took back off toward the house, almost knocking her off its back several times along the way. Afterward, the horse was never the same. It would try to kick her, and if she got on it, it would fall backward, trying to crush her beneath it. Once, it started acting like its old self again, letting her climb onto it. But when she did, it ran towards the road and stopped abruptly, bucking her forward into the path of an oncoming car. My grandpa saw it and put a shotgun to its head, and the horse just kept breathing heavily and stared straight ahead. My mother barely missed being run over by a car that saw the horse coming and managed to swerve out of the way, and my grandmother begged my grandfather not to shoot the horse. He finally decided to give it away when he saw my mother wasn't badly injured. The horse fell on the next person to ride it, breaking her collarbone, and the father did what my grandpa said he should have done in the first place. After that, animals started going missing, and one of the hunting dogs was injured by something during an attack at night. My grandfather sent out some hunting traps and stayed in the hayloft above the barn with a shotgun and rifle beside him. He slept out there for several nights, hunting whatever was out there. He figured it was foxes or maybe coyotes or wolves or even a desperate bear, which is what he attributed the smell in the woods to and the horse's reason for losing its mind. But nothing came the entire time he slept out there, and eventually, he figured it had moved on to easier prey, or maybe even died. The day he stopped sleeping in the barn, my mom was out near the tree line playing with the injured dog as it was healing. Out of nowhere, the dog started sniffing the air, then positioned itself between my mom and the trees, growling and barking. My grandpa heard the noise and came out, stopped in his tracks, and called back to my grandmother to bring his rifle, then whistled for the dogs. My grandma came out, handed him his gun, and then asked what was going on. As the dogs all started to react like the first one, my grandfather pointed to one of the treetops, which looked longer and thicker than those around it, but it was very slightly moving. It was at least 6 feet tall, he told me later when he would retell the story, but probably a good bit taller. He took aim and fired just as he saw a pair of wings start to open up. Whatever was up there was watching them, but he beat it to the punch. It was a kill shot, directly in the chest with a high-powered rifle. He instantly started running towards it with all the dogs following him as the thing plummeted to the ground, the breaking of tree branches wholly unmistakable. When he reached the impact point, he raised his rifle again and commanded the dogs forward to flush it out, but they all just stood in the spot and kept spinning around, trying to catch a scent that seemingly disappeared. A pile of broken branches lay on the ground in an obvious landing spot, but beyond that there was no proof that anything had ever happened. No body, no blood, no trail, nothing at all. It was like this thing had either disappeared or gone straight back up the way it came. He searched those woods for several days but never found a sign of what that thing was or what it ever could have been. They didn't see it or experience issues with the animals ever after that. Decades later, when he was dying, he kept talking about how he saw something. In his delirium, he referred to it as an alien, but said it was coming back for him. I've never seen that man scared of anything in my life, but there was actual panic and fear in his voice. A few nights before he died, he had already been too weak to stand on his own for several days, and my grandmother awoke to the sound of a gunshot. She ran outside, fearing the worst, and saw my grandpa lowering his rifle, staring at something in the distance. She took the gun away and helped him back inside, and that was that. I don't know if whatever it was actually did come back for him, or if it was a hallucination of an old memory, but I like to think he went out with a final FU to the thing that tried to torment his family all those years ago. Allow me to begin with a little bit of background without doxing myself too much. I live in the westmost region of Appalachia, pretty far out in the sticks, save for a few sparse neighbors consisting of farms. I'm surrounded by pretty much nothing but woodland. For the past few weeks, I've been spending a lot of time in the forge, as the marching band season begins shortly, and I want to get as much work done as I can before then, when my shop time will be limited. As such, I work most days into the night. My shop consists of a garage connected to the barn. It's about 50 by 20 feet, open on both sides. It may have been a trick of the light, but lately, I think I've been seeing dark shapes moving around the trees. Not human exactly, but also not entirely animal, but very similar. It's moving quickly, and then stops periodically, with no discernible features due to the darkness. I could see no eyes, and they made no sound save for a strange call I heard one night while feeding the chickens. It sounded almost like a whale song, but less echoey and short. I at first thought it was maybe a variety of foxes or something, but upon observing the tree line, the strange shapes were moving among the pines were substantially larger than any fox I had ever knew. I did not sleep well that night. I kept having nightmares and would wake up in cold sweats. It was at that point that I decided I could no longer allow the creatures, whatever they may be, to remain unknown any longer. I had to figure out what they were. I surmised that the following night I would turn all the lights on in the shop, as it would appear that I was inside at work, and, like hunting wild boar, don my ghillie suit and wait in the trees for them to appear. Yes, I was literally hunting shadows. This may have been chalked up to my foolish overestimation in my own steel, which would be tested the following night under the moonless. I worked the day, glancing into the woods periodically, observing only trees swaying in the cool winds. As night fell, and I left the shop dressed as a stand of foliage, and perhaps underarmed, I only had thought to bring my .22 Ruger MK3, fitted with a matching suppressor. It looked cool, and thus to me was more enticing to bring into the forest than a more powerful .38, or even a .45. But there was also the problem of over-penetration, and the noise that would surely wake my sleeping folks. But the suppressed Ruger loaded with subsonic rounds did not surpass the sound of one speaking. I had also considered that the figures were perhaps a herd of cows or horses that has broken loose of a neighboring farm. But the way they moved was just not familiar to me. They almost seemed to glide over the underbrush like a wolf in flight, not like a cow or a horse. It would pick its way carefully through the foliage, and it would undoubtedly make noise. I waited almost half an hour before I noticed a shape, unmoving, 30 yards away from where I sat crouched. I found this unusual, as there were always more when I observed them from the shop. I scanned my surroundings, remembering scenes of "It's Right Behind You" from slasher films. I turned back to the figure, which seemed to be moving away from me. So at that point I gave chase. Navigating the area was not too difficult as I knew it well, but the ghillie suit constantly caught on the brush as I ran, and to compound that, it was beginning to rain lightly, dampening my clothing and sending shivers down my spine. After just a few more minutes, I burst out into a clearing near the house with hills rising to the east, lowlands to the south, and the house perhaps a half mile to my west. My watch has a compass on it. I stared into the tree line surrounding me, but to no avail. Whatever it was nowhere to be seen. I decided to rest there, leaning on a tree, staring into the clearing, still on the hunt for whatever this thing was. The stars were bright. I got up after a while, slightly disappointed in my failure to hunt and catch whatever this thing is, and turned to walk home and retire. But, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a frame between the trees of the lowland, leading to the creek. There were five, perhaps more, shapes standing still. I can't explain how, but it felt as if they were staring at me. I did not raise my weapon. Walking closer, I could make out definitive shapes. They looked to be canine, like very big dogs or wolves, which was rare to see this far south. I was about 20 yards away from them now. As I approached, it became clear that they were not wolves or anything of the sort. They were not like any animal I have ever encountered or hunted in my entire life. Something about the encounter felt viscerally wrong. They began to approach me, and that's when I began to realize that, ghostly apparitions or not, I was utterly alone with five or possibly even more large creatures with only a small caliber pistol and a hunting knife to defend myself. Pangs of panic gripped me. I took a few steps backwards and began to run, breaking into a sprint, pausing to squeeze off five shots at 50 yards away, hitting nothing. But as I broke the woodline, I glanced back and saw nothing of the creatures that stood before me moments before. After a few minutes, I burst from the trees, damp and panting from the labor of sprinting with a wet ghillie suit through the thick brush. I collapsed onto the chair in my shop and stripped the suit off, sitting there wet and tired in my underwear. The next day I was advised by a friend with which I had consulted to burn sage in the vicinity. So I did, and I have never seen whatever this thing was ever again. I have no idea what it was. I've looked up things, and I just can't seem to find anything that matches up. If anybody in the comments has any idea what this could be, please let me know. This story isn't really paranormal, but it's the only thing in my life that still haunts me. I was about 20 years old at the time that this happened. I was out hunting with my dad and our dogs. We were just strolling along this path when one of the dogs starts barking its head off. It was freaking out about something up ahead, and we assumed it had found us a moose. The dog's barking came closer, and with it, heavy steps. We realized the dog was being chased by something. At first, we weren't worried though. Just the sight of humans is usually enough to scare off whatever. But we were still ready to protect ourselves if need be. It wasn't an elk or anything we'd seen around here for a long time. It was a big, fat mama brown bear charging for the dog. I assume mama because no bear in its right mind except for a mom with cubs will go after humans usually. As it was my dog, it came straight for me. We started shouting and making ourselves big, but it didn't stop this thing from ramming into me. It started mauling me. If you're wondering, backing away slowly isn't going to stop a charging bear from attacking. Too late for that now, though. So we did what instinct said. I only remember the heavy pressure on my chest and the dog barking until my dad got in a good shot, which sent the bear running back from where it came. I got scratched up all over my chest and had a few broken ribs, but if my dad wouldn't have been there, I would have been dead for sure. I still feel a little worried when I go out hunting, but I love the lifestyle so much that I don't think I could ever honestly quit. Besides, my pup's learned his lesson since then, and I don't think he'll be messing with any bears ever again. I can't be the only one who grew up in a small town with a few resident creeps. I'm not talking about criminals or stalkers, though. I'm talking about those people who live in the house on the hill or at the end of the street. The people that everyone knows of, but nobody actually knows, if you know what I mean. Everyone else in town seems to agree that there's something not quite right about them, and they never have visitors. I'm sure every single one of you listening knows the type. When I was a little kid, I spent a lot of my time with my grandparents on their farm in the foothills of North Carolina. I would explore all around their property, and most of the neighbors would let me explore their land too. However, there was one man who lived a few miles from the farm my grandparents warned me about that I should never go near. The neighbors all agreed something about him was a little bit off. The exact reason people cited were varied, ranging from PTSD to an escape from a mental asylum. But nobody could say for sure exactly what his problem actually was. I always followed my grandparents' advice, and I never knocked on the door of the elegant, two-story farmhouse where the mysterious man lived. But I nevertheless found myself standing in front of that old farmhouse back in November of last year. Now, I'm a machinist by trade, but sometimes I work odd jobs on the side for some extra cash. I often do jobs using heavy machinery, mostly grading driveways or digging drainage ditches. So when I got called, asking what my rate would be for removing about a dozen large tree stumps, I was excited at the prospect of an extra payday. However, when I arrived at the given address, I was more than a little bit surprised to find that it was the oh-so-familiar home of the mystery man from my childhood. I slowly rolled up the long gravel driveway, suddenly trepidatious about the meeting of a man that I had been so advised to avoid. Finally, though, I reasoned with myself that surely the resident must simply be an old shut-in, and I scolded myself for being such an irrational, you know, guy. I'm sure he's probably a good customer based on childhood gossip. I can't paint him as a bad guy just yet. I knocked on the sturdy door of the farmhouse, and after just a few moments, the door swung open to reveal an elderly gentleman, probably 80 or so. I introduced myself, and he hobbled shakily out of the house to show me the stumps that needed to be removed. I gave him my estimate for the cost, and he slowly nodded, saying, "Mm-hmm, that'll be fine. When can you start? The sooner the better." We shook hands on a date and price, and as I got back in my truck to leave, I thought to myself that he seemed far less scary than all the rumors might suggest. Maybe it was because he was a much older man now. Although, as I looked over my shoulder, going back down the driveway, a flash of movement from the tree line caught my eye. It was only there for a split second, but I could have sworn. I was pretty sure I saw a person's face staring out at me from behind one of the trees on the edge of the yard. I had always been told the man lived alone, but I figured it wasn't really that odd for someone to be visiting, right? Maybe it was an out-of-town grandchild exploring the woods, just like I would have done as a kid. Anyway, I returned just a few days later, and the stubborn walnut stubs proved no match for my old D7. Once I was done, I knocked on the door and informed the owner I had finished early and would be billing him for fewer hours of work than anticipated. He smiled dryly and thanked me for my honesty, offering to pay me extra for finishing the job so quickly. I initially assured him that it was really no big deal, but then he made me a very tempting offer. He asked if I would like to come and hunt on his land. Since it was the height of deer season at the moment, I was certainly interested, since his entire 250-acre property was ringed with barbed wire fences and no trespassing signs. In fact, everybody I knew avoided the place due to the rumors and stigma surrounding the owner, and that meant I would probably have a chance at some pretty gnarly deer. I eagerly accepted and thanked him for the opportunity, and as soon as I had a free weekend, I headed out over to his land. Nearly the entire property was covered in dense woods and pine thickets, so this wouldn't be the usual post up in a tree stand and wait sort of hunt. No, this would be a real, old-school deer stalking. It couldn't have been more than 40 degrees that day, and to make things worse, it was misting rain. It was great weather for hunting, but it certainly made me grateful for my thick clothing and warm socks. I followed a tangle of game trails through the thick woods, and I saw plenty of deer tracks, even a few really large ones, all leading deeper and deeper into the pines and cedars. I should also mention that the woods were incredibly calm and peaceful, since the gloom and chill of the rainy November day had practically put the entire forest to sleep. In fact, other than the occasional rustle of a small animal dashing through the damp underbrush, the only noises were my own footsteps and the soft patter of rain. The rest of the day passed in much the same way, but by 5:15 it was starting to get dark. So I decided to turn around and start to make my way back to my truck. Luckily, the rain had mostly stopped, but a thick fog now hung in the damp evening air. I carefully retraced my steps as the woods became darker and darker and more unfamiliar. However, just when I was about to pull out my flashlight, I noticed that mine were no longer the only footsteps in the twilight thicket. I stood very still, listening to the movement in the brush as it drew closer. The footfalls were too loud to be deer, and besides, even a herd of deer are careful and methodical as they move, pausing regularly and picking their way around any obstacle. By contrast, these footsteps were reckless and constant, and I could hear twigs and low-hanging limbs cracking. This, I realized, is the sound of a human traipsing through the woods. I quietly crouched and hunkered down behind the base of a large poplar tree. Making myself small in its shadow, I was worried that whoever was coming might be a poacher, and certainly didn't want to catch a bullet due to being mistaken for an animal in the murky darkness. As the footsteps grew closer, I realized there was definitely more than one other person out there in the fog. And even worse, I couldn't tell exactly what direction they were coming from or headed in. I could hear voices too, at least two, maybe three, but they sounded very muffled and distorted in the thick mist. I held my breath as I listened closely and I leaned out from behind the tree just enough to look in the general direction of the noise. There, probably no more than 20 yards away, was the soft glow of an old incandescent flashlight. Bobbing through the fog and silhouetted in the light, I could see three nightmarish figures. At first, I couldn't even make any sense of what I was seeing. The three silhouettes looked like aliens. They were so bizarre. Each one of them had an amalgamation of human and animal features. However, on closer inspection, I realized that the mysterious shapes were actually people. Strange people wearing what I think were skulls or masks. The one in the front was definitely wearing a deer skull and antlers on top of his head, as well as a hooded cloak that was made from crudely cut animal skin. It also carried what looked like a shovel over its shoulder, and in its other hand, it held a flashlight responsible for the glow. The second and third figures stood close together, and they both wore a collection of coyote tails like bandoliers across their bodies, along with coyote skulls adorning their hoods. As I squinted and I looked more closely, I could see that they were carrying something between them. It looked like a large tarp or a sack, and judging by how the two coyote men handled it, it must have been heavy. As I watched the surreal column move wordlessly through the undergrowth, there was suddenly a loud rustling in the brush behind me. I snapped around to bring my rifle to bear, but when I turned to face the noise, I saw that it was only a fat possum. The little thing just stared at me for a few moments before dashing away back through the woods. But I guess the noise of its passing had gotten the attention of the three animal men, because when I looked back around, the three of them and the one with the deer antlers had turned back and begun to walk in my direction. I held my breath and made myself the smallest possible behind the poplar tree, and I silently flipped my rifle safety off. The deer man drew closer and closer, and the ground on either side of my hiding place was bathed in the yellow glow of the flashlight. My blood thrummed in my ears as my heart beat faster and faster. I didn't know for sure that these people would be hostile, but I wasn't about to pop out and introduce myself all the same. The footsteps of the deer man were very close now, and if I listened carefully, I could make out the sounds of breathing on the other side of the tree. However, just when I was for sure thinking he was about to come around the tree, I heard one of the coyote men call out in the distance. I couldn't tell quite what he said, but I could make out the word heavy, so I assumed he was complaining about whatever he was carrying. The light suddenly disappeared as it was pointed back in the other direction, and the footsteps began to recede into the distance. I must have waited a good 5 or 10 minutes before getting up from my hiding place. I was completely unsure of whether or not the bizarre trio had actually left or not, but when I poked my head back around the tree, they were definitely gone and out of sight. I wanted nothing more than to get the heck out of there as fast as I could, but I couldn't help going and having a quick look at where they had passed. It didn't take me long to locate their footprints, and much to my relief, maybe, you know, humorously, all three sets I found were normal shoe prints. No giant hooves or paws. However, as I shone my flashlight on the ground and investigated the footprints, something else caught my eye. Right in the middle of the trail the three of them had left, there was a glistening splotch of red-brown liquid that could be anything. But I'm pretty sure it was blood. I shined my flashlight further down the trail, and sure enough, there were more drops and splotches of this dark liquid everywhere. Further still, there was a large puddle where the coyote man had had to stop earlier. Feeling nauseous, I realized the implications of what I may have seen, and I quickly doused my flashlight to avoid broadcasting my presence. Now filled with a rising panic, I got moving as fast as I could to the trailhead, as quietly as possible. The rain had started again, and in the foggy darkness I could barely see a few feet in front of me, but I still only pulled my flashlight out when I absolutely had to, in case those people were still prowling around. Finally, eventually, probably around maybe 7:45, I finally stumbled out of the woods. I hastily jumped in my truck and pulled back onto the road. I was pretty focused on getting out of there, but as I drove past the farmhouse, I did notice that the lights were on. There were no other cars in the driveway, though, so whoever I'd seen in the woods hadn't come by that route. Once I was home safely, I called the sheriff's office and anonymously reported that I had seen some suspicious men in those woods. I didn't mention the animal skin cloaks or the various pelts and skulls. I don't know if there was ever an investigation into this, but nothing ever showed up about it in the local paper. As far as I know, no bodies were ever found and no arrests were ever made, but I can tell you for certain that there are places in those woods where something can hide and never be found. For the rest of the season, I didn't go back there, and I'm not sure the old man's offer was good for more than one season. Even if I got the chance, I don't think I would go back out there alone. However, at least now I understand all those warnings from my childhood. I don't think all of the neighbors were really that concerned about the old shut-in. I think they knew about those people using the land for God knows what, and they wanted to keep me and all the other kids out from that area to keep us safe. Thanks for listening to these allegedly true, creepy hunting stories, sent in by viewers just like you. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button, as it really does help me out a ton. I'd love to know down in the comments as well, what story tonight was your favorite? That last one was probably my favorite one this time. Just such a creepy, interesting story. I myself have felt like I've been hunted in the woods, but I've never actually seen a creature. How about you guys? Have any of you ever felt like you were stalked or being watched in the woods? I'd love to know. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help this channel keep going. If you're not aware, you can download and bring your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories wherever you go by downloading them on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much everywhere else you find podcasts online. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I couldn't do this on a daily basis without you guys, and I really appreciate that. I'll see you guys very, very soon with another creepy video.